Blondie today on the bumper music. Thank you, Dave Hopper, our engineer. It's the Roundtable on WAMC, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Today on the panel, we welcome the enchanting Alan Shartok, who is with us most days.
Zap, you're a frog.
Fine. Jimmy Vielkind, who is the Times Union Capital reporter. Also, Judy Patrick, the editor of the Daily Gazette. Judy, you survived the storms out in Schenectady way last night,
Man, did it blow and rain last night in Schenectady. We had a lot of power outages. The city schools are closed today because there's so many roads closed.
Wow. We had in Great Barrington. You know, the great thing is that moment, you feel the storm coming, you feel it going, but that great moment when the lightning and the thunder are as one.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, that's the storm is right there on you.
Upon you, yes.
It's upon you.
And it was interesting. I'd never seen this before. The sky was yellow.
Saw it too.
That's bad.
It was just yellow. There was the hue of the sun coming up as it was setting over the horizon. Yeah, yeah. And you had this just sort of thick air and it had this eerie, beautiful / we're about to all die kind of feeling.
Yeah, tornado. Absolutely.
You know, it was,
and then the tornado warning came up.
Right, and then you're thinking, huh.
And so that's when I told the kids, I said, you know what, we'll stay in the interior hallway, and then they all started crying, are we going to die? And I said, no, it probably won't die.
Baby loved it. She watched it through the window, and then she went to sleep.
Can you get five people into a bathtub? Or seven people, actually, in your case.
Yeah, not our family.
But
it was a very large bathtub.
When the last tornado came to Great Barrington, and it was quite something, we were sitting in the front of Michael Ballon's Castle Street Cafe and looking out the window, and all of a sudden, Jimmy, the sky turned greenish.
Yeah,
green.
Greenish. Yeah. And that's when it happened.
Huh.
So we're still waiting to see if a tornado actually touched down in Rotterdam. National Weather Service will probably be out looking today. But from what I heard, there were trees down all over, and it was pretty spectacular.
Really?
We'll see.
Yeah, we shall see. I mean, you know, you rarely get tornado warnings out in dear old Del Mar. And when they flash across the screen, you know, you run for cover. So we'll see what happens. All right, let's get down to real business here on the roundtable today. And a discussion that has been taking place now for a few weeks. It concerns Attorney General Eric Holder and whether he has now become a real liability to the Obama administration. There are going to be more hearings, and he is... I don't know if you saw this.
What did you know and when did you know it?
Right, basically. And the thing is, there's this now this off-the-record conversation he wants to have, or, you know, I don't think anyone really wants to be a part of it. He wants to have... He wants to sit down with media representatives to discuss guidelines for handling investigations into leaks, but it's off the record. New York Times says, no way will we go to this off the record thing. Associated Press says the same thing. So before we get to the larger issue of should Holder stay or should he go now, what do you make of this? And we'll start with our journalist here, Jimmy Vielkind, first.
Well, there's some value in off the record conversation, but there's a lot of there are a lot of causes for concern in such a thing. So if he wants to discuss policy, if he wants to have an open ended discussion, I can see where he would ask for that to be off the record. If you think about labor negotiations, they often take place in an off the record setting. If you think about major negotiations over business deals, these are rarely conducted in public until there is a proposal, a firm deal to be brought out. But at the same point, I see, especially given the political climate, why major media organizations, the New York Times, the Associated Press, would not be interested in this. And further, I see, and I've read several reports written by people in Washington that the Obama administration has been reluctant to put officials and to put government bureaucrats and people, like, I think one example is the Capitol architect, right? Someone who's not controversial, that they're hesitant to let this kind of person speak for the record. So I know that there, especially during the last campaign cycle, there were a few reports that this had reached a sort of new apogee. And that I certainly understand why a media organization would be reluctant to enter into such talk.
But, you know, you make such you're such an interesting guy, and you're thoughtful about all of this. So I have a question for you. Number one, if your boss is at the Times Union, would you be surprised if somebody leaked something about ongoing discussions? Would they be happy about that?
Leaked in what sense?
Leaked in that they gave information out that ought to be circumscribed.
Well, we're in the business of publishing information that people sometimes don't want us to have.
Yeah, so. But how about, I mean, in your own house, that's what I'm talking about. In other words, so whatever, you could understand the way in which somebody who's trying to run a government, when a WikiLeaks comes out and, for example, might compromise assets in the field.
But government is far different than a newspaper. And a government is a government, and a private business is a private business. A government is funded by the people and is, has incredible power and is subject to certain far more.
Oh, and newspapers don't have a private don't have a lot of power, right?
We have power, but we are a private business.
Well, you're private. And every time I have this discussion on the Media Project with Rex or with Ira, it always comes down to this: we're a private business, and you're not, and we're constitutionally protected, and you're not.
And the government is the government, though.
But that's why.
Good point, Judy Patrick.
But what are you, the referee? Well, 2 points.
I've got to get word in once in a while.
What is this, a wrestling match?
I got a microphone.
Well, we own the government, Alan. It is ours, right? We pay government officials' salary. We pay the president's salary. It's my tax dollars. And frankly, depending on, you know, different constitutional scholars will phrase this differently, but, you know, power in the American system rests with the people. That essentially the government is supposed to serve at our privilege.
The rest of those people who are owning all of these newspapers, right?
I'm not sure I get the point that you're driving at. I think that newspapers have been a consistent check on government, and I think that newspapers, in striving to publish information about government, have been arguably the best check in the last several decades against government overreach.
I cannot disagree with you.
Well, thank you.
When it comes down, when it comes,
ding, ding, ding. He cannot disagree. No, let the record show.
Point. No, when it point. When it comes to things like the Pentagon Papers or the Cuban invasion, which they did not publish and which they should have, you make a very good point. On the other hand, well, there's a reason that the American people don't like the press. They don't like it. It ranks very low because they think basically, you know, the richest people in the country, where now we have the Koch brothers trying to buy up all of the.
I know I always put myself in the category with the Koch brothers.
Totally.
As one of the richest people in the country.
And well,
you should see the limo he drives around.
But Jimmy, you're nothing more than a tool for those people. I mean, that's the whole point. That's the whole point here.
Let the record show that Alan just called Jimmy a tool.
Of the rich people.
You know, I think Eric Holder misplayed this very badly, because you can't get these people together and say we're going to be off the record to discuss this kind of important.
And what do you think it shows?
I think
that they're making this
a bad judgment.
No, they're hurting. I think it means that they're hurting. They know they're hurting. They're trying to put the genie back in the bottle, I think.
But that genie's not going back.
That's what I was saying. I mean, look at the political climate. This is not the time that you do it. I mean, I think there was a poll published recently that showed it's approximately a 50-50 split as to where the American people are on this issue of whether the government overreached in its obtaining of records from the Associated Press. So, you know, I think that newspaper publishers know that they are in a position of, if not strength, then certainly relative strength vis-a-vis the Department of Justice. So why wouldn't they try to dictate more of some of the terms?
All right, Judy, I ask you directly. You are an editor. You're a higher up. Would you go to such
an off-the-record meeting? No way. No way.
All right. And Alan, you haven't really given us your opinion of whether this is a good thing
or
not
a good
thing.
I think this is, listen, I know the Rex position and the Ira position is there's right and there's wrong.
Right.
You know, here. I think this is a mixed bag. I really do. So I think, for example, if we don't arrest reporters, although the reporters are always saying they could arrest us as co-conspirators, you know, in this thing. But nobody gets arrested for being a co-conspirator. Judith Miller goes to jail for not complying with a subpoena or whatever else. But in fact, they're not culpable of the crime by publishing some material. So it's a mixed bag.
Well, you know, getting to Jimmy's point earlier, the Politico, their editor-in-chief, John Harris, he's going, or will go, if such a meeting takes place. He says, quote, "As editor-in-chief, I routinely have off-the-record conversations with people who have questions or grievances about our coverage or our news-gathering practices. I feel anyone, whether an official or ordinary reader, should be able to have an unguarded conversation with someone in a position of accountability for a news organization when there is good reason."
A wise sage once said, there is nothing that ultimately is off the record. And that is a very tough thing to remember. It may come back 2 years to 2 years later to haunt you. But Jimmy, one of the questions is, you go off the record with people all the time. They say, let's keep this off the record. But it's the reporter's responsibility, obviously, to make that decision. television, right, mm-hmm. Judy?
Right, but working reporters rely on off the record, I think, a little bit too much nowadays. If you're going to talk to me, don't try to sway me with off the record comments, trying to manipulate the story one way or the other. Put your name behind it and talk to me.
Get
for
some
real.
Some ice cream, but don't eat it.
No, I think you're absolutely right, and I think it's something that, particularly in the political realm, is something that you bump into frequently, and it's something that we do our best to push back against.
And, you know, a big part of the problem is people in government won't talk on the record. They won't even acknowledge the simplest facts
on
the
record.
Yeah, and it's incredibly difficult for a working reporter.
Well, you work for Andrew Cuomo, and you down in the bowels of the administration. And you
wait a minute, I thought I was a tool of the rich people.
Oh no, he's not saying you work for Andrew Cuomo.
No,
come on, Jimmy, don't be defensive.
Okay, now this is a great happy time to take a break, and then we'll get back to a larger issue concerning our Attorney General Hopper. Get us out of this.
Support for WAMC comes from Fly Fish the Deerfield at Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Guided fly fishing tours on the Deerfield River, Western-style float trips, wade fishing, all skill levels, flyfishthedeerfield.com. Mr. Reuter Plumbing, septic system installations, inspections, pumping, location services, trenchless pipelining and replacement, sewer odors and more, thehudsonvalley.mrreuter.com. And Marriott Town Place Suites, Albany, downtown. Offering studio, one- and two-bedroom suites with fully equipped kitchens. Amenities include indoor pool, breakfast, local transportation, Wi-Fi, and parking. TPSAlbany.com for reservations.
Yeah, it's the roundtable. It's 23 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Alan Chartok is here. Judy Patrick from the Daily Gazette. Jimmy Vielkind, Times Union Capital reporter. And we invite your comments on the program, and you can weigh in at Vox Pop. No, it's not Vox Pop.
How much?
What?
You said you can weigh in.
All right, let's not have that conversation. It's roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And while I have a minute here, I believe we are still looking for some fund drive volunteers. Our fund drive starts on Monday. If you're interested in volunteering, give us a call. And that number is call Michelle Battle. She'll talk to you. 800-323-9262, extension 189 if you want to volunteer.
She's a nice lady.
And it kicks off on Monday morning at 6 a.m. And boy, I am looking forward to it. Which reminds me.
You just told a big fat lie.
Yes.
Your nose has grown bigger and bigger.
Yes, I did. All right, so the bigger discussion before we hit NPR News at the bottom of the hour. Attorney General Eric Holder taking a vast amount of heat over very different things going on. So at what point does he become such a political liability that he falls on the sword and says bye-bye? Alan, start with you.
They'll know it when they see it. In other words, look, the Obama administration clearly wants Holder to stay.
And do you think so?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
On the surface
down? Well, because he is a guy that the president gets along with, that the president relies on for advice, and we know this. And they're not going to throw him over the side unless they have to. But as we have seen with other administrations, now what's going to happen is you have these two houses of the Congress, particularly the House of Representatives. They're going to call the guy up. They're going to say, what did you know? When did you know it? And if it begins to look bad, or if it looks like he may have misspoken at some point, then I think he could be in a lot of trouble.
Well, I mean, the GOP leaders of the House Judiciary Committee sent Holder a letter yesterday asking about information, whether he lied to Congress when he said at a May 15th hearing that he never took part in any potential prosecution of the press for the disclosure of...
Well, there's a lot. I'm sure they sat around a table and tried to figure out what that meant. But there's a lot of latitude. You know, there's a lot of space in there. Never took part in any prosecution, meaning did we move to that stage or, you know, I mean, I think that's, look, these guys aren't fools. They're lawyers. They're top lawyers. They sit around and say, okay, if we say this, then we're okay.
But the IRS, the IRS in charge, the official in charge, takes the fifth. Then you have all this pointing at Holder. You have 2014 elections coming up. Politically, when is he a liability? Let's throw it out to Jimmy and Judy.
Well, you're kind of damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, right? So people have been attacking Holder. Remember Fast and Furious? This guy's been in the crosshairs arguably for what, 2 years now?
Sure.
So, okay, he remains and he's embattled. Or you ditch him And then you have to appoint a new attorney general. And who's that? And, oh, we have to do confirmation hearings. And, oh, this guy once in law school read this book and blah, 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 blah. So there's really no easy path here. I think, you know, not following the nuts and bolts of it, that the calculation is similar in these kinds of cases. You sort of wait for a giant shoe to drop. And if that shoe is big enough, you bye-bye, Mr. Holder. If it doesn't drop, then he stays. But, you know, as you pointed out, Ray, you know, he is a person who gets along well with the president. Here's a person who—
I think I pointed that out, Jimmy.
I'm sorry.
All
two
right.
of you
Let
are,
the record
are
show
just,
that Alan pointed that out. All right. Moving on.
As the great sage pointed out, I think that, you know, you've got a guy who gets along well with the president, who is capable, and who has, you know, staying power in the job. There's something to be said about— the status quo, right? There are people there. They are running the department. Any change would be disruptive.
Mm.
Judy?
You know, Holder's has been under attack for a couple of years now and has stayed solid. And he is the attorney general. A departure of an attorney general is a huge thing for the administration. Mm-hmm. And actually, we're kind of running out of time for this second term. I know we're just into it, but there's not a lot of time left.
Yeah, and now you have the appointment, Judy, of an FBI chief who is a Republican.
Right.
And don't think that for one moment, that does, and a former number two
yes.
at the Justice Department.
And thank you for some dramatic foreshadowing, because that indeed is something we're going to discuss on the other side of NPR
so
News.
So you don't want to talk about it now?
Well, if you can get it all in 40 seconds, have at it.
No, I just wanted to make the point that everything that happens is related to everything else that happens. It's,
right.
you know, that's the way it is.
Right, and clearly this would be a bone to Republicans who
sure.
would be otherwise inclined to attack the Obama Justice Department, Eric Holder presiding.
But either way, if he stays, then that gives the Republicans some sort of political leverage come the midterm elections, come the 2016 presidential election, saying, look at this dirty administration.
I think that they would find the leverage no matter what, Ray. I mean, whether he stays or
whether
he goes.
Whether it has traction is another
this
story.
Way. They would try to find it because right now none of it's stuck.
Well,
has stuck.
Well, this is a fine point to hit NPR News. Mr. Hopper, if you please. Welcome back to the Roundtable. 9:36 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We have Alan Chartok here. We have Judy Patrick from the Daily Gazette. We have Jimmy Vielkind from the Times Union. And, Alan, the lockbox is open for business, eh?
It is, and, you know, it's terrific. Everybody's telling me. I meet them on the street. Everybody says, I'm going to do it. I'm going to put something in the lockbox. We do it all today. Boy, we could really wrap this thing up.
I did not see the number this morning. Yesterday we were about...
Over 120.
Oh, yeah, we're over 120.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's great. And then it all counts on day one of the fund drive.
That's right. So if we
Monday.
Could do another 100,000 today, we'd beat the record.
All right. WAMC.org. You'll see a picture of a fictional lockbox, although it may look like that. I don't know. Click on that and make your secure online pledge. We welcome our producer, Sarah LeDuc, who has some
Sarah.
Emails
Hi,
and
guys.
Whatnot to read. Hello, Sarah.
I have a couple of emails sent to roundtable@wamc.org. Daisy wrote in and said, this is such a different time. If one of the leaks eventually led to a terrorist attack, who would be blamed? Not the press. Obama. That's why all these comparisons to Nixon are so invalid.
All right.
And John wrote in and said, I don't mean to be disrespectful. However, I feel that the gentleman from the Times Union insults the listener's intelligence when he says we own the government.
Hmm. All right, Jimmy, you're the alleged gentleman, so why don't you respond?
Well, I think my point
Thanks,
was a valid one, that, you know, we as taxpayers own the government. I think that should be our attitude toward our government.
Theoretically, you're right, certainly.
Well, thank you. Okay. And John called me a gentleman, so thank you, John. I appreciate it. And as always, I appreciate the feedback. Thank you for listening and for taking the time to write.
And you can write to us at roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Okay, on we go. And we'll talk about this. We just heard it on the NPR News. President Obama plans to nominate, at least so we've heard, James Comey, former hedge fund executive who also served as a senior Justice Department official under the Bush administration.
He was number two in the Justice Department.
Right. And they want him to replace Robert Mueller, who is stepping down as the FBI head. And so, seems to be naked politics to these cynical eyes. But let's go around the room. Judy, you first.
Well, they need to get this done fast, and this may be the way to get an FBI director in there before Mueller leaves. And he's got to leave sometime in July, is that correct?
I think so.
Two months, I think he's got more.
Now, the New York Times and he says, well, this is a quote from an article I think came out last night or late in the afternoon. By choosing Mr. Comey, a Republican, Mr. Obama made a strong statement about bipartisanship at a time when he faces renewed criticism from Republicans in Congress and he has had difficulty winning confirmation of some important nominees. I would suspect it is much more political than that. I would point to the nomination of Congressman John McHugh of upstate New York to be Secretary of the Army, thus eliminating one powerful person who was up for re-election. I would also point to Anne-Marie Berkel being nominated to the Consumer Product Safety Commission last week or the week before. Now, it's speculated that she was going to run again against Dan Maffei if she takes this gig, and I don't know if she will. She's out of the running. So it works on two levels for President Obama, I think.
Well, you know, I find you somewhat cynical, you know, in your approach to this, because it may well be that these are the best possible people. But
Jimmy's nodding.
Seriously, are you saying this?
No. I have my pie on my cheek. Yes. I think that obviously it's all politics. But one of the things that disturbs me the most about this is this. If, in fact, the Republicans have been so intransigent, they haven't let him make court appointments, they haven't let him make people appointments of people in his administration, then is there an impression that when he does something like this, that basically they've won, which is my way or the highway?
Jimmy.
Didn't he...
Hang on, let me do that more like the McLaughlin group. Jimmy Vilkind.
Wrong.
I'm just remembering what a giant kerfuffle it was when he nominated Chuck Hagel, the Republican, to be Secretary of Defense.
They got mad at him because he was a traitor.
Well,
that's my feeling.
Can you win? I mean, is the president damned if he doesn't, damned if he doesn't? So,
well, let's put it this way. He's president.
Right.
He's president. He just won a major election.
Check.
The Republicans are always thumping themselves on the chest and saying how they've beaten him and how they're after him and all the rest of it. But they're not the president. He is. And that's really got them annoyed.
Well, I think Judy's point was excellent, is that he wants this to be done quickly. He suspects that this might sap some of the vitriol against that seems to be would have come out against any appointee. Here's someone who's been on the job, who, especially as you pointed out, Alan, there is something of a compressed timetable for the rest of this administration, so you would not have a hugely steep learning curve.
Yeah. Well, you know, go ahead, Judy.
You know, and I think people it's very discouraging for people to see so much of this run by politics, but the bottom line is the government has to be run. You got to get people in these positions and just to make it happen. And if this is how it has to happen, I think this is the president's choice.
I mean, this to me, it's all these things we've spoken about today. It's all about the 2014 election. It's all about the 2016 election, positioning, you know, the Democrats positioning themselves to fend off what they perceive to be the angles from which the assaults will come from Republicans.
That's a very good point.
And it's not about running the government well?
Well, I suppose that's a secondary
issue. I think it's not about running the government well.
Now, that is cynical. I'm sure that running the government well.
No, but, you know, I was talking to somebody just the other day who said to me, or just yesterday, yes, I think it was my wife, who said that had he he been a little bit more forceful.
Now, who's he?
The president.
Okay.
Had the president been a little bit more forceful and said, okay, these are my positions and I'm taking them in the first term, he would not have, in the first couple of years, he would not have lost the Congress. And maybe he should be thinking about, if he's always playing defense, it doesn't allow him, by doing these kinds of things, these appointments and the rest of it, that it doesn't allow him to sort of be leading his base constituency in the right direction.
Isn't that what the second term is for, playing offense?
Well, you can say whatever you like. I think not. I think not. Franklin Roosevelt did a lot in his second term. Of course, he was going to run for
17 terms. I mean, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Jimmy?
I think Judy's. I'm more inclined to be in agreement with Judy. I think that, you know, there's a political element here, but the guy's got to run a government.
Yeah.
And the fact that he doesn't need to run for re-election, I think, makes him less political.
Absolutely.
More.
At roundtable at WAMC.org, if you would like to weigh in this morning, it is 9:43. The panel continues in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center's Graduate School of Social Work, now offering mental health practitioners a postgraduate certification program in military trauma treatment, adelphi.edu/Hudson Valley. Tannery Pond Concerts, New Lebanon, New York, presenting Sebastian Baverstam, cello, and Yannick Raffalamagna, piano, Saturday, June 8th at 8 p.m., 888-820-1696. And Unusual Wedding Rings and More in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield, a jewelry emporium providing traditional and non-traditional engagement, wedding, and anniversary rings for conventional and same-sex couples. UnusualWeddingRings.com.
So it occurs to me that Dave Hopper, our engineer, is not even old enough to remember when Blondie was putting out records. And yet, all morning long, we've
Does he choose them?
Do you choose the bumper music, Hopper?
Oh.
That's great. I mean, nice to hear some Blondie.
He's in a band, I think. Is he in a band? No, he's not in a band.
All right, so we're done talking to the guy without the microphone.
Boy, I'm hungry.
It's Alan Shartok who's hungry. It is the roundtable. It is our panel discussion. Judy Patrick from the Daily Gazette is here. Jimmy Vielkind, Times Union Capital reporter. Judy, what's happening in the paper this morning?
You know, one of the stories we wrote about today was a follow to yesterday's news about the big expansion, $30 million up at the Saratoga Racino. They want to, you know, add a big hotel, 120 rooms. But the other thing they're doing is adding a big entertainment space. And we checked in with some local theaters, and has people concerned. Proctor's people are worried that that kind of entertainment there is going to draw people away from their venues.
But that's
going to
happen. If you if you put a casino up, and clearly that's what they're angling for, and in Springfield, same thing. Any casino you go to is going to have a huge entertainment component, because what Foxwoods has learned and Mohegan has learned, as the gambling dollars dwindle, they have to go other avenues. That's entertainment, that's shopping, that's dining. Mm-hmm. And so
I'm impressed you know a lot about this.
All right.
You know, the thing is, if this big complex has a hotel and a spa and a restaurant, are they going to go to downtown Saratoga Springs and spend money? The Saratoga Springs merchants and business communities are happy about this project, but it's hard to believe that they're going to get a lot of ancillary business here. But again, and the theaters are the ones we talked to today. The Palace in downtown Albany, they have the 2,000 seats. That's the same size that the Racino's talking about. And the same kind of bookings. You know,
And Proctor's.
Are they concerned about the bookings more than, I mean, it's pretty far away from the
from
people.
Saratoga?
No, the Palace would be far away.
No, but you know, Judy makes a very good point, which is they all have these restricted covenants, which basically say you can't, if Joan Baez comes someplace within 50 miles or something
90
like that,
miles,
or
I think.
90 miles, depending on what the negotiation is. I know Joan Baez is going to be both at Tanglewood and down at, what's the name of that place there? Down by the border.
Tijuana?
No.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea.
Okay, fine.
Which border?
Yeah, I don't
New
know.
New York border.
Taco
down
Bell?
Yeah,
I'm not sure what you're going with this.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But yeah, booking is one of the issues that they're going to be competing with this Racino for acts. I'm sure that they're not going to be doing ballet at the new Racino.
You can be sure of that.
Or
ballet.
Depends on
type.
What, yeah. Right.
You can be sure of that. But you know, look, we all face this. Another newspaper comes in, and your publishers are going to look at the other newspaper and say, I don't want them to take away from our advertising. Or if another public radio station comes into an area, let's face it, we're not overjoyed. Nevertheless, there is nothing you can do about it.
Well,
where is there?
Well, there is something you could. I mean, they're speaking their minds, and they're trying to get public sentiment behind the nonprofit theaters that they need support because they provide an important service to the region. It makes the region healthier or more diverse when you have a whole range of entertainment things.
It could
offered.
Go the other way, couldn't it? In other words,
it could be
that once Saratoga becomes a entertainment, more of an entertainment center, that you know, it just floats all boats.
Yeah, it also could be that if they decide to put a casino in this area, maybe Saratoga is not the place to be. If you really want to hurt economically distressed areas, maybe go to some place like Schenectady or Gloversville.
Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing about a casino in Saratoga is you already have a base of attraction in Saratoga. You have the racing,
the horses.
Of course. You have this incredible beautiful Victorian city that in and of itself serves as an attraction, and which has, especially in the past several years, been programmed very well. They have the Victorian Walk, and they do all kinds of lovely activities there to draw people to Saratoga.
Mm-hmm. They got Cafe Lena.
Right. And you have separate, and I think it's, what, 1 mile, maybe 2 miles outside the downtown core? Certainly close, but not necessarily in the same orbit. You have this casino / racino, which maybe could become a full casino. I think of this on the statewide context. When the governor has described his vision for these casinos, it's been about an economic boost. Sure. And whether that's going to be a sustained economic boost or whether that's going to be a boost of construction, I think that there's certainly some weighting toward the latter. And so to say that you're going to not – the thing about the Racino and the argument perhaps against it is – well, okay, so how much is it going to cost to put in a couple blackjack tables and hire a couple croupiers? You know, that's not what the governor is looking for here. They're looking for big. They're looking for construction. And so putting this theater on the table, I think, is posturing to make the point of, look, if you were to choose us, if you were to go with us, this is not going to be a minor thing. This is going to be we're going to do something big and something new.
But they're going to do it anyway, right? They're going to build this hotel anyway, correct?
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
But if I mean, let me. Somebody just said it. One of you, and you're both very smart.
Oh boy.
But my question is, think about this just impressionistically. Which city would do better with this thing? You know, Saratoga, which is Tony, or you know, whatever you, the Schenectady thing.
Gloversville.
You might think, yeah. Gloversville,
Utica.
Schenectady. Schenectady.
Well, can I just opine here? There's a different paradigm here between Springfield, Mass. And Saratoga together. Keep them together, yeah. and the casinos in Connecticut, because the casinos in Connecticut are far away from anything. The casino, a potential casino in Saratoga and also in Springfield, Mass. It's close to where other action is. I would not at all see. Most casinos want to keep people in the building. They want to keep you self-contained.
Atlantic City. That's why Atlantic City stinks.
And casinos in Connecticut, they're far away. When you go to Foxwoods, you're staying at Foxwoods unless you want to drive 20 minutes, 30 minutes to something.
Have you ever been there?
Of course. Okay. And in Mohegan as well. But in Saratoga, you're 3 minutes from downtown. And I think that'll be – and Springfield exactly the same way. And I think it'll be a completely different situation, and you will see the potential for economic benefit.
So the question is, what is the state looking for? You know, as the state writes the guidelines by which these projects will have to be bid, are they looking for giant destination resorts, or are they looking for, okay, yes, and we also have a casino here?
Yeah.
And based on what I've heard from state officials, they're looking for giant destination resorts.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that I'm not saying the fix is in, but for Saratoga Raceway to say, okay, we're sinking our 30 mil in the theater and the hotel, they know that they have a darn good shot of going full-blown casino. Jimmy, what do you know from the legislative angle?
Well, there's discussion about exactly what the siting requirements are going to be. You know, Senate Republicans led by John Bonasick, who represents Sullivan County in the area in the South Catskills, introduced a bill that would essentially take the remaining geographic zones of the state that have not been taken off the table, pardon the pun, for Indian gaming, as we've seen in the North Country.
How big are those exclusive regions?
Well, they're fairly big, and as my colleague Jim O'Donnell reported last week in our paper, the Capital Region's shot of getting one of these casinos has just increased because Central New York has been taken off the table with the tentative pact that state officials struck with the Oneida Nation. Western New York is thought to perhaps be taken off the table. There's an ongoing dispute between the Seneca Nation and state officials. The North Country, according to a tentative pact with the St. Regis Mohawk Nation, has been taken off the table. So that really leaves you with the Catskills, the Southern Tier, and the Capital Region. And they've been defined in these broad terms.
Yeah.
And of course, that's all fungible. But again, what they've been talking about is this sort of construction of a destination. And so Senate Republicans want to see some action on Long Island, which under the governor's proposal will be off the table.
For the first 7 years.
For the first,
or
right.
Until the negotiations in the, on the second floor when they're working all of this stuff.
Well, that's the point. So I think that, you know, in all the times I've covered development, and Judy, I'm sure, would say exactly the same thing, it doesn't cost much to come up with some pretty renderings and have a press conference.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, is this going to happen this session?
That's a great question. Governor Cuomo
clearly
wants to do that.
Is anything going to happen this session? And that is the question. I think that this is a very interesting and unique legislative session. We have simmering on the stove this idea of the Women's Equality Act, which includes equal pay element for women, as well as some sort of abortion provision.
The Senate doesn't like it.
I can't describe it in detail because there are no details to describe. This is a right. somewhat of a theme in our state government.
Yeah, there are 10 points, but I can only find two of them.
Yeah. And then there's also this idea of casino siting legislation. And the way this works, for listeners who haven't followed the nitty-gritty of it, like people whose name rhymes with Ray Baff, know that to do these casinos, you need to amend the state constitution, which means that the state legislature needs to once again approve a ballot measure, which will then go on the ballot theoretically this year in 2013. And then state legislators have said that they will not do this. It's called second passage. They will not take this action to prompt the public referendum unless there is some extra law on the books that guides the siting. Mm. And that's where the dispute is. The dispute is over this enabling legislation, this siting legislation.
You know, but in Massachusetts, where I live, a good state, there is no.
It's a base state.
It's a commonwealth.
I didn't say it was the only good state. I just said it is a good state. New York is a good state.
Yeah, sure.
I don't want anybody to think I said anything else.
I see. Sure.
And things seem to be so much better handled, you know, the referenda, the idea that it would have to go before the people, you know.
It's moving very well.
In Massachusetts.
Yeah.
But less there's less ugly politics.
Well, I think we're putting the cart before the horse. Let's see if once, you know, state legislators pass it again. Let's see if it passes in the public vote. I mean, who knows?
Right, and that's the other thing. So there are several hurdles for any casinos to clear in New York. And again, the least of which to bring it back to Ray's point is we don't know what the heck's going to happen this legislative session. Will we continue on our path of an indictment a week for sitting state lawmakers?
We're overdue, aren't we?
We are overdue.
Yeah.
I don't know, and that's very much a question that's hanging. It's just sort of hanging like a stink in the air at the Capitol. Now the governor has. Starting last week and beginning with a full blitz for a new initiative to create tax-free zones. Prior to that, he was talking about a new panel that would help deal with fiscal stress for upstate cities, including places like Poughkeepsie, which was found by the comptroller to be stressed, perhaps Schenectady, et cetera.
Election.
So there's a lot of things on the table, and I cannot at this juncture say what is going to come off in the final
Rush.
Well,
okay, so let's imagine it's the middle of the night. Those guys are all sitting around the table, round table, and they got a monopoly board on in front of them, and they say, I think this is what you're getting at. We'll trade you Ventnor Place for Marvin Gardens if you do this and that. That's the way it's going to get worked out.
Of course. And so we're seeing these private negotiating sessions between Governor Cuomo and the legislative leaders. But there are just so many variables not related to that normal end of session dance, including the swirling allegations of malfeasance in the state assembly, where there are Republicans who are on the attack against Speaker Sheldon Silver, a Democrat from Manhattan, over the way he and his top aides handled allegations of sexual harassment against a senior member from Brooklyn.
You don't think that's gone away already?
No, another Democrat.
Another Democrat. As Jimmy's paper pointed out, a long-term critic of Shelley Silver finally comes out, and she says, you know, he should go. But
here's
that's
the tragedy.
Surprising.
Is this what Shelley wants to be talking about, though, Alan? Yeah. And the longer this is in, as the longer this comes up in the conversation, the more it's going to detract from what we're talking about here, which are the brass tacks of negotiation and governing. Maybe I'll put that in air quotes for those of us not watching.
Well, you can watch online.
You can watch WAMC. Online. Guess me advise a video of all
that's why Jimmy wears a tie.
Online.
Good Lord. but my point is that there are these extra variables at the Capitol this year that have really clouded the way the legislative session is going to end.
All right. Now, here's the tragedy. We just touched on the Shelley Silver thing. We are out of time.
Let's
Jimmy
all vote.
Vilkind, run, what, do another hour?
No, let's all vote. Will Shelley go?
No, I'm not.
No, he won't.
I recuse myself from the. Now, listen, what's your website? One of the great blogs, of anything political in New York, Jimmy, give us the URL.
It's blog.timesunion.com/capital with an OL.
I read it every morning.
And Judy Patrick, the Daily Gazette, which I read faithfully every morning at 5:30 a.m.
Thank you.
What's the website?
DailyGazette.com.
It has been so nice to have Judy Patrick here from the Daily Gazette.
Wonderful.
Jimmy Vielkind, Times Union Capital reporter. Alan, the enchanting Alan Shartok, was here as well.
Zap your frog.
Remember, you can weigh in via the email, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. And, another hour coming up. As soon as I read the script, I'll tell you about it. Hopper.